Thunderbolt Labs, where everything is big and black.
Giant robots smashing into other giant robots.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Giant Robots Smashing into Other Giant Robots podcast. It is November 1st. My name is Ben Orenstein, and I am here at RubyConf 2012 with Tamara and Randall from Thunderbolt Labs. How's it going, guys?
Another day in paradise.
It's going fantastic.
You feeling all right? You guys got your cute matching shirts on? I love this.
We just got these drop shipped today. So
really?
Yeah.
Just in time for the conference? So I want to ask you, where did you get the idea to start a Rails consultancy? Like, that's just such a brave business model that it's just out of nowhere.
Yeah, I was pretty proud of the idea myself because we think we're the first ones to do it.
Yeah.
And so we consider it to be pretty revolutionary and groundbreaking. I'll admit, it was half Randall's idea. But yeah, we're not even sure what it means to be a Rails consultancy. We're still trying to figure it out.
Right.
Yeah, you know what? I kind of agree with Tamer. I mean, moving into open source software and writing web applications in this time,
right.
Nobody was doing
it. It's completely unproven, which is it makes me so impressed.
There was some David guy who came from Europe who tried. I mean, really. But he didn't really prove the market.
He had to give
anything.
Up and go into like race car driving or something.
Yeah, exactly. Which should tell you right there. There was no viable market for web applications.
Right.
The man's driving race cars.
QED.
Very expensive race cars, but.
Yeah.
So how's business? How are things going?
Can I say fucking? It's fantastic.
Yeah, good.
You shouldn't have encouraged us to curse. This podcast is now no longer going to be.
It's
going to
be an explicit one, I have a feeling.
How many bleeps can we get?
Yeah. We got a guy who's awesome at editing stuff, so you're going to sound chased by the end of this.
Actually, you're going to be pretty lucky if this doesn't end up sounding like Morse code. Anyway, business is good. It's, strangely enough, to the contrary to popular belief, this was actually pretty much the only and best time to start a Rails consultancy because pretty much all the senior guys got bought. There was apparently a Groupon coupon for like Rails consultancy, and they all got purchased.
Yeah. As long as you bought five or more, you got a half off.
Exactly.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Or maybe it was a Living Social that. Anyway, there was something like that. It was like a group buying thing that happened. So.
So you're in San Francisco?
Yeah, we are.
We're in San Francisco, Randall and I. We've got employees and contractors all over the place, actually.
Oh, okay.
So we do a pretty distributed team, which is challenging but fun.
But we try and get everybody. Actually, one of the things that we did was we started the company. Tamara and I thought about, we knew a whole bunch of really great people and a really great devs that we wanted to work with, but none of them really were centrally located. So our idea was, well, screw it, just keep everybody distributed and then bring people together at events, because we all ended up seeing each other at conferences at least once a month anyway. And then, you know, we just got done, we took the entire company to Barcelona.
For
a month, because we figure that way it gave enough time for people to actually get together if you want to just physically meet. And honestly, what's that phrase? Familiarity breeds contempt. There are actually nice parts about not being in an office with the people you work with every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I can get shit over a campfire and it's like, I don't actually have to look at you. I just have to try and read your Emoto icon in the chat room.
And we brought everybody out to this conference, and we basically do that all the time. You have to. But it's like a tax that we're willing to pay because we get to work with the people that we've always wanted to work with, no matter where they live. A lot of people who are in our company have families, you know. We can't ask them to relocate.
Right. So that's your strategy to sort of make the group feel cohesive, is bring people together from time to time, particularly around conferences?
So, I mean, the funny thing is, you actually asked how we started the company. One day, Tamara and I, we got drunk. I'm sure that's shocker to anybody who knows us, but we got really drunk. We actually finished a bottle of Crown Royal, and this other bottle of Crown XR, we were working our way through. And we started bitching about things that companies get wrong, and we were talking about culture and everything else. And
I'm sure you can guess where we were, you know, what company we were bitching about.
I'm sure.
Now, Tamer. Tamer. Let us not say ill things about.
No.
It's not about who killed who.
We're not going to name any names. I mean, it's water under the bridge. That train left the station a long time ago.
So, as my subtle compatriot has otherwise indicated, we were otherwise complaining about some cultural shifts that we didn't necessarily agree with, and we got really drunk, and we decided we were capable of actually building a place where we wanted to work, hence the reason, like, we went to Barcelona for a month, because apparently we thought that was the sort of company we wanted to work for.
How many employees are you guys up to these days?
Five employees now.
Yeah, and about six contractors.
Yeah.
Six or
so
seven.
About 12.
Yeah.
We know we actually have to be an employee if they don't want to.
That's another major thing that we do that's very different is we've you know, Pretz and Company excluded. We've looked around and seen how other companies treated contractors, especially, you know, I was freelance for a long time, so was Randall. And so we know what it feels like to be a subcontractor for a company, and it's the worst thing ever. I mean, like, you have no visibility, you don't feel like you're part of the team, and you feel like just a hired gun. Mm. And we're really working very hard to make sure that's not the case. Yeah. So anybody who's ever worked with us is considered part of the family. They're in our campfire room all the time. They're helping us with discussions about, like, internal tools and, like, internal products and, you know, all kinds of stuff. So,
and, yeah. And you've had people that went from freelance to being – or contractors to be full-time employees?
Oh, yeah. With the exception of a couple initial hires where we'd known for the longest time that we've always yeah. wanted to work with these people, that's how we do things is we bring them in, contract, and you know, make sure that the entire team gels.
Yeah, it actually fits really important for us. Honestly, you don't want to find out in the middle of a drunken debacle one night that you really actually can't communicate with somebody. It's kind of bad to find that out while you're trying to get bailed out of jail or something.
Yeah.
But also, you know, we spend a lot of time with these people. There's the dividing line between work and your, like, I don't know, personal life is, it's not as strong as it once was. You know, we spend an inordinate amount of time doing these projects with people, and so you might as well like the people you work with.
And also, you know, another area where we feel we differentiate from other consulting shops is that we, you know, Randall and I don't want to build a huge company, but we also don't want to be a bottleneck for every project. So we don't have anybody on our team that can't take an entire project single-handedly. Yeah. Most of the people that we look at for hiring have run entire consulting shops on their own, and they're just tired of it. Mm-hmm. So it's people with that level of experience where they can do everything with managing the client, making sure the communication's good, and they know that development's only one part of a successful project.
Right.
Yeah. So
how is the San Francisco Rails market these days? Just ice cold?
Oh, yeah. There's nothing there. Yeah. Stay away.
Yeah. Because, you know, I don't know. Apparently people say it's hard to find developers and there's a recession on, but God, whatever. I don't know. Actually, strangely enough, you know, we actually do a lot more than Rails. Oddly enough, what we found is, like, Rails is an entree to people who actually have real problems. And they're like, hey, I think Ruby on Rails can help me as a tool to solve this problem. And then when we get in and start working with a client, what we find out is that a lot of times they actually have other systemic problems, and we actually have a tendency to start helping them with those other systemic problems, things like infrastructure, data migration, data analysis issues, you know, even just general methodology.
We're doing some analytics work. We're doing some, what would you call it?
The applied stat stuff or the modeling stuff?
Yeah, the modeling stuff.
Some stochastic modeling projects. Yeah. Basically, we're actually started moving towards more mathematically influenced solutions to things. So applied statistics and you could call it signal analysis.
That matches your background, right, Randall?
Yeah, I actually had a background in, you know, I was forced to relearn statistics because, you know, college doesn't do a very good job of teaching you much of anything except how to drink heavily, which is something I still practice to this day.
Okay. Got to keep those skills sharp.
The guys find it really fun, too. So they're getting, like, they're totally digging into all the books and stuff. And we, you know, we pair with the client on a lot of work. We think that that's absolutely the best way. I think most shops are starting to come around to that, that it's absolutely the best way of being able to leave the client in a good position when you disengage, and there's no question of knowledge transfer and stuff.
Right.
And no handoff period. And so that means that, like, our guys are learning at the same time as they're learning. They're learning development. Our guys are learning statistics and applied mathematics and stuff like that.
Yeah. The only other things is we actually also do a lot of, like, social stuff with our clients. So a lot of times we found that what they think are technical problems actually aren't technical problems.
Right.
It's really weird. Sometimes it's like coming in and being a marriage counselor for a technical project. Like, you know, you're really rewriting the code, but it's not about the code. They're arguing over a whole bunch of other shit. So you got to solve those problems first.
Yeah.
And
that's actually part of the reason why we don't take rescue missions or anything like that, because we found that a rescue mission is actually just it's an outcome of a dysfunctional team, right? Mm. A dysfunctional company.
Yeah.
And so anytime you walk into a rescue mission, you think, well, all I have to do is fix this code base, then
No.
You're just in for a world of pain.
It's interesting that you say that communication is like the core of it. I've interviewed a lot of people that do consultancies or entrepreneurs and things like this, and this keeps popping up in so many different fields, in sales, in consulting, everything. It's always about the communication.
Yeah.
It's always the problem when something is wrong, and it's always the solution to get it back on track.
Well, if you think about it, one of the reasons, the reason people like working in the Rails world is that it makes communication easier. Think about the success of tools like RSpec and Cucumber. It's because communicating with people who don't write code or write software for a living becomes much more tractable. And in fact, actually, who was it that said something like code is actually, you're writing a note for the, I can't remember who it was, but somebody actually had this, I'm going to do a poor paraphrasing, but it was essentially that you're actually writing messages and notes to the next developer in line, and sometimes that developer is you.
Yep.
And that's the whole point of, like, everybody has clever code, right? Everybody's seen clever code, and the problem with clever code is that it doesn't communicate things effectively, it doesn't communicate well. And especially when you're being paid by the hour or in time increments to get something done, you need to communicate effectively, both to understand what the problem is and then both to understand what the risks and communicate the possible solutions. And that's essentially what you get paid for as a consultant. You get paid for good judgment. Hmm. And if you can't communicate the fact that you have good judgment, then you're actually doing a disservice to your client.
Right. So you sort of touched on this, but one thing I thought was interesting about you guys is you have your hourly rates just straight up on your website.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. How have people responded to that?
Actually, very positively. It's up there for a couple of reasons. The number one reason is that we believe in honesty and openness, and that just sets the standard right there. It's like saying, look, this is what we charge, and we're going to be really simple about it. We're not going to do any kind of weird tiered rating thing. We're certainly not going to do any kind of fixed bid thing. It's just we have value. We're exchanging our time for money, and that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is it makes the conversation, it avoids uncomfortable conversations for both the client and ourselves when, frankly, we're just not a good market fit.
Yeah.
And I'm sure every consulting shop has had that kind of issue before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of funny. Putting our rate up on our website, some people thought we were crazy. Some people thought, they're like, oh my God, it's genius. But in reality, it was an effect of laziness. When we first started Thunderbolt Labs, it was Tamara and myself, and we didn't have time to field. We fielded a couple sales calls from people who were like, yeah, that's great. So do you think you can actually write this WordPress thing for like $200?
Well, the thing is, we believe really strongly in meeting every potential client. So anybody who comes in through the front door, we say, like, great, before we go any farther over email, if you're in the city, let's meet for coffee, maybe get some drinks. If you're not in the city, let's do a video chat, because that does wonders for making a successful engagement throughout the entire thing.
Yeah.
And we do it really early. And if we had to do that for everybody, even when it wasn't a good market fit,
we've prohibitively expensive.
Yeah.
And we will fly to meet our clients just to talk to them
before
we even engage in a project, just because we feel so strongly.
Mm-hmm.
As drunk as we were when we formed the company, we actually did manage to scrawl down some core values, and meeting people face to face was one of the core values.
Hmm.
For that very reason, because it's really easy, especially, I think we've all done this, when you get that email that's kind of snarky from somebody and you're wondering, is like, are they trolling me? Are they being a son of a bitch? It's like, what the hell are they mean? Snarky bastard. And then you actually go talk to the person, it's like, dude, I totally forgot to put the winking smiley on the end of that sentence. So sorry.
Yeah, you start reading emails in their voice.
Right.
You can actually hear them say it.
Hmm. Yeah, that's the part of the communication. That's what good communication gets you.
Yeah. So going back to the rate thing for just a second, you say $277 an hour. Where did that number come from? It seems like such an arbitrary.
Very deep in private calculations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the last seven is what really gets me.
So we were actually, as it turns out, the market rate of a bottle of Crown Royal and most scotch actually goes up about 3% a year. And we calculated how much we were drinking in scotches from Islay versus other whiskeys. And it came out that we needed a $2 bump in our rate in order to cover what we were drink it. See, this is what an applied statistic background gets you. You can actually do these measurements, and it's really significant scientific applications that you can.
Got it. So this wasn't the result of like thousands of iterations and A/B tests to come down to exactly the right number.
And by A/B tests,
well, it depends. See, I'm kind of upset that you said the rate on this podcast, because that was the rate you see.
Oh, right. Yeah, awkward. It's actually much higher or lower.
Well, it depends. We've actually got four test groups going on right now.
Right.
So,
well, who knows which variant of the podcast people are getting.
That's true.
I'm going to say different numbers
and
different.
Now. Yeah.
We got a really good sound guy. We can make this happen. No problem.
As it turns out, well, you know, when you charge $1 million an hour, people have certain expectations.
Right.
And at $1 million an hour, we just, it's not like we're .NET devs. We're merely like, you know, $500,000-$600,000.
Sure. So you have an expensive whiskey habit, but not that expensive.
So that's saying, yeah.
We're trying.
Actually, our bill rate does include client whiskey and drinking with us. So, I mean, it all washes out in the end. We actually take a bit of a loss.
Right. Sure. So speaking of taking a loss, so you guys, it seems like you guys and some of your employees are doing talks at conferences.
Yeah.
Like Tamara, we ran into each other at Railsberry this year.
Yep. That's where I got engaged, by the way.
That's right, yeah. Yep. You got engaged, like, the day before?
The day after I saw you, I think. Because we went over to Prague. My fiancé is from... she's Polish, so
okay.
You know, that was a nice thing to do.
We actually, completely
she's Polish
by random...
She's Czechoslovakia to get engaged?
Yeah, because... I know. I kind of screwed it up.
Whatever.
I remember seeing... completely random, I was in Prague. Was we at Prague? Prague to Krakow. And
yeah.
We ended up on the same overnight train.
Yes.
And so I'm walking in this, like... this like Soviet era train station,
yeah.
And like 40 feet ahead of me is you. I was like, this is so weird.
Yeah. It was fun. The sleeper train was weird because, you know, at first you think it's going to be all romantic and stuff, and then
it's not.
It stops every hour. There's light shining in the window, and you just, yeah.
Oh, it's the weirdest thing. Like, it would pull into a station and then disconnect from the rest of the train, and
we were going to get shot.
It was a little scary.
Dudes to just bust in with machine guns, Kalashnikovs.
You were on a train left on a track in the middle of where?
Yes.
Somewhere.
For about 2 hours.
In the middle of nowhere. And yeah, 2 hours go by, and then finally another train shows up, and you connect to it, and then tries.
I think it's when we switched over to the border.
Nice.
But so anyway, so you guys are doing this conference speaking. Do you guys feel like you're getting good ROI on that sort of thing? It's basically a marketing effort, right? To get your name out there and establish yourselves?
No. Well, I mean, there's definitely a marketing component, let's be honest, right? Getting your name out there, that's important. But frankly, I've never had a Ruby developer hire us. Have you ever, you remember that happening?
No.
No.
No, I mean, I think for us... So, actually, one of the things we actually keep us here is, like, Ruby has a really good community. Honestly, coming to conferences, it's a chance to share something you found out. It's a chance to talk about something you think is important or something you feel passionate about. Like, Brian, actually, at this Ruby conference, is actually talking about some stuff for simulation. And the interesting thing about that was the client we wrote it for has an army of lawyers. I mean, literally an army of lawyers. And... we can't talk anything about that project we're doing for them. So Brian wrote an entire other project from scratch to make sure that he didn't violate any of the terms of the contract, just so we could talk about the simulation stuff that we learned.
Huh.
There's that as well, giving back to the community. There's the team building aspect, which you talked about earlier,
right.
And that's actually for us, that's pretty paramount. I mean, just a conference is a great excuse. When we did the month in Barcelona, it was kicked off by the Barrica conference, right?
Yeah.
It's just a great excuse to pick a nice location and get everybody together, and everybody enjoys going to conferences, especially when they're in interesting places, you know?
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is Ruby, even more so than other languages, is very community-driven and community-oriented. It doesn't feel like you're going to a conference so much. It kind of feels like you're just going to hang out with your friends, and your friends just happen to be in
Portland. Oh, we totally are. I mean,
Portland,
we got off the plane last night and immediately went and played pool with everybody that we haven't seen in the last 2 months.
Yeah,
you know?
And like three of the guys were actually from Sweden, like our friends from eLabs and a couple of independence consultants. We just randomly, you know, hey, guys, where are you? It's like, well, we're not in Sweden. We're here. Well, where were you before that? They were in Chicago, you know. So at SCNA, a different conference.
Yeah.
So the conferences, strangely enough, I think the Ruby community is very distributed, right? And I think the conferences are actually much in the same way they're parallel to what we do with our company. Or rather, our company is a parallel with what Ruby does with its conferences.
Mm.
It's okay to be anywhere, but you just kind of pull everybody together at a point or a moment.
Mm. Yeah. Keep it small and keep it distributed and, you know, keep it very personal. That's what I like about the Ruby community.
Hmm. So a couple weeks ago, I had someone, a guy named Brennan Dunn on the podcast, and he was someone who was previously a freelancer
Then
started his own consultancy.
We are
Titans. He's got some really good ebooks and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The Double Your Freelancing Rate ebook and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me that for the first year, he actually made less money at his consultancy than when he was a freelancer. Mm-hmm. And basically because he was having trouble projecting cash flow and finding projects and things when he made the switch to having full-time employees because they have such a large cost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thoughts?
Well, I can speak a little bit more honestly about this. I'll just say that when I was at my previous job, I was earning a ton of cash. And it is true that this first year of what we're doing now, I am personally not earning as much as I did before because we're investing, right? Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think that we're having an issue with marketing. I don't think that there's a mistake that we're making right now. If there was, we'd just change it, right? I just view it as we're doubling down constantly because we expect this to be a long-term thing. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we're making some pretty good decisions.
Yeah, we're pretty transparent on that stuff. So, I mean, in terms of cash flow, there's some basic rules of consulting. And honestly, we owe a lot to our – we actually have two really good advisors, Sarah Tavel, who's actually now at Pinterest, and Rob Mee, who founded Pivotal Labs. And we basically, before we did this, we basically sat down with them and got a reality check. And basically had Rob yell at us and say, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this.
Yeah, he saved our butts on a couple of
What were those mistakes, do you remember?
Oh, yeah. One of them is no money, no work. You don't pay, no worky, no money, no worky. It just doesn't happen.
No work up front?
None. Zero.
Yeah.
Because it sets a poor precedent, right? Two, it actually, the only thing it does is increase your liability with the client. And three, remember how we were talking about communication? Okay, so it's really difficult to have that conversation with a client when they owe you money and they're just trying to ship. You know, you don't want to actually have that conversation like 2 weeks before they're shipping. They're about to take a round of investment. And then you're like, about your product. I'm into you for $100K and we really need to talk about this bill. Right. He's like, yeah, about the money. I already spent your $100K. I figured you'd wait until after we get funded after the launch and then we can hang around. And
right.
Just problematic. It's like... There's business.
There's also the aspect of, you know, like I said, we're strictly time and materials, and most consulting shops are nowadays. But there was a couple of times when we found ourselves, once knowingly and once unknowingly, acting as subcontractors behind a fixed bid contract, which you can understand puts everything at odds, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're passionate about the M&A thing, not for any reason other than it's the best thing for the client, right? And when we found ourselves operating kind of within this umbrella of a fixed bid, it just really went south. We actually disengaged from a project that was...
Oh, yeah.
Can we say a number on that?
Yeah, we can say the number, but we shouldn't say the people. So
no.
there was just... the client was a sovereign wealth fund. So
the total budget for the project was somewhere around 1.5 or 2 million, I think.
Yeah, and then it had gone up to about 5.
It just felt dirty, though. Like, we were not operating in the way that we wanted to operate. And the client was great. Like, the end client was great. And, you know, we're friends with the people in between, too. But it was just not a healthy situation.
So we should actually... It's kind of funny. This is something that thought was really important and people don't understand. You wanted to talk about errors in consulting. So one of them is the reason time and material works is because you're never at odds with your client, right? If we're doing time and materials, I don't have any impetus to pad my bill because the minimum commitment in our contract is 15 minutes. So we bill in 15-minute increments. 15 minutes into a contract, if the client thinks that we're doing something wrong, they can fire us. And strangely, that goes both ways. 15 minutes into the contract, if we think our client isn't a good fit, we can fire them.
Well, and we have now, three times that I can count on the top of my head, we have disengaged from a client, a good client, who, you know, was paying on time, happy to pay the rate, but we didn't feel that we were providing the necessary value for what our expertise is, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, there was one in the way beginning that Randall always laughs about where... building a back-end API, a CMS system, blah, blah, blah. And at some point, I'm like...
Tamer's writing PHP.
I was trying to edit a WordPress plugin, and I'm like, what the fuck is going on in my life? And this is not cool. So we disengaged, and the clients have been so happy when that happens. And we just refer them to somebody else who's, you know, maybe doesn't have quite the same level of expertise, but they're the right fit, you know?
Right.
if you feel an ominous presence on the microphone, is because Brian Lyles is actually standing over my shoulder.
Hovering.
The second Looming. Randall Thomas.
Yes. The dark shadow of Thunderbolt Labs, if you will.
I found the blog post where you announced him joining the company. That's like one of the best titles ever.
Brian.
Cornering the Rails Black Market.
You know what? Once again, the podcast isn't visual. Just for people who don't know, this is Randall, and I'm actually black.
Brian, do you want to say hi?
Hello, sexy people.
So that actually makes two black people. Strangely, the only person who's really African-American in this company is Tamer. I mean, it's look true. At the beard on that motherfucker. It right. doesn't say Egyptian.
How do you think I got in college?
It's like, so we were just joking because we were, accidentally it's came out. It's like, holy shit, we've got like all six black people in Rails.
Yeah. So you got some advice about avoiding some mistakes. Are there any ones you made anyways?
Oh, yeah.
Stuff you screwed up anyhow?
First off, communication. Back to that communication thing about bad news. Tell the bad news early and explicitly, as shortly and as succinctly as possible.
Yeah, don't be vague. Don't assume that they understand with the wink-wink and the nudge-nudge that their project's going down in flames.
Right. No. Two, do not stick with dying projects. If you know that the project's going to go down in flames, do not go down with it. You're not the captain. Your job there is to actually mitigate risk, explain the risks. If the person goes against your advice and you think that's something that's going to kill the project, you should pass them on to somebody else who wants to take on that risk. Because unfortunately, the client will not remember the fact that nobody remembers the I told you so, right? What they remember is the fact that the project crashed and burned. And invariably, whether it was their fault or your fault, doesn't really matter. As a consultant, it's always your fault. Right. At the end of the day, that person's going to go tell their friends, like, oh, hey, what about those Thunderbolt guys? Those f***ers? Well, you know, when I wrote Facebook for Dogs, they totally screwed me up. They said my product didn't have a product market fit because dogs don't type. And I will tell you, if they had actually just done the UX and that JavaScript the way I told them to, the doggy keyboard would have worked. And it wasn't my fault. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, your reputation suffers. And I mean, think about it. ThoughtBot actually has one of the leading reputations of other Rails consultancies, and I'm sure that's important to you guys. And a lot of that comes from keeping happy clients. Mm-hmm. And there are some people that you cannot make happy as a consultant. And if you find one of those, get rid of them.
Right.
And no matter how much the money is, because the trick is, a lot of times I think people, they get very concerned. You get addicted to that. Well, they're such a, yeah, they're kind of abusive and they're a little bit of a jackass, but you know, they're paying me like really well and they pay on time.
Yeah.
And
I think that's one of the nicest things about being in a position where you have a good brand and there's a good demand for your services is right. You can turn people away.
Yes.
Like you can look at projects and go, no way, this is not going to work out.
Well, I think there's a much higher demand than most consultancies understand, and I think it has a lot to do with price tiering. So when I first started, when I was solo, before I worked for another unnamed company and then we founded Thunderbolt Labs, I was having a lot of trouble with just a general level of respect that I was getting from the clients and kind of a price ceiling that I was hitting. And looking back, it was obvious that the problem was not
that
I was charging too much. The problem was that I was charging too little.
Tamer, you lost the bet.
And yeah, Randall told me what the problem was at the time, and I'm like, whatever. And he's like, I said, you know, I'm hovering around 175 to 185 at the time, right? And I'm like, every time I try and go to 195, the client just balks and just knocks me back down. And he gave me two pieces of advice. He said, one, never negotiate on your rate. Like,
negotiate what?
On your rate.
Okay.
If you're going to do any negotiation, Randall always says, and this is really good advice in general for negotiation, if you, then I, right? So if you prepay for 6 months, then I will give you a 10% discount off of the existing rate. And whenever you invoice, you show the actual rate, you get the discount as a line item on that, right? But the other thing is, he said, well, your problem is that you're starting below 200. And if you jumped over it, it's like pricing things $9.99, right? I mean, if you jump over it, then people's expectations are reset and you enter into a different market to start with. And then there's a whole huge market of people needing help at that level, but they're not going to hire the $150 consulting company for it.
It's so ironic that you can be shooting yourself in the foot by and making not as much money.
Yeah.
Like you're getting worse clients and not making the cash.
Ask Amy Hoy. She'll give you all kinds of advice about
actually,
that.
Actually, I loved Amy's summation. She said if your client doesn't feel like, if you tell your client your rate and they don't feel like you just slapped them in the face, you're not charging enough.
Yeah,
and she's
half
right.
Half of your clients should walk away.
The other thing is, I think people mistake what consulting is, because generally speaking, the people who get into writing software consulting, they're technical people, right? We're engineers first and business people second, it's really not about the technology. We actually think, oh, well, that's easy. I could just write that in 10 minutes. No, that's not the point. You actually have to think about what I always... It's called value-based pricing. You have to value it in the terms of the business person, the person you're working for.
Right.
And for them, you don't charge them based on your effort. You charge them based on the value.
Which is for us, our value is basically our experience and our knowledge, right? Our ability to communicate, our ability to hold their hand throughout the project. The problem with value-based pricing is a lot of consultants misread that to mean that they should be doing fixed bid. Well, let's look at the end product of what we're giving them and price it valued at that, right? Mm-hmm. Whether or not it takes me 10 minutes, if this product's going to make them $1 million, I should be charging them $200K or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that's not the value that you're giving your client. You're giving your client consulting. As if you were a counselor, you are giving your client that value.
Right.
Basically, you should be that guy in the mafia movie that leans over to the Don's ear, whispers something, and then somebody gets shot. Right? That's who you want to be.
The consigliere.
You're right, exactly. But if you're the guy who's getting shot, you're in the wrong part of the consulting business, right?
Right. All right, one more question for you guys. So let's say I make you sell Thunderbolt Labs tomorrow, and I'm giving you each $10 million. What would you do?
Start another Thunderbolt Labs?
Yeah? More consulting?
I don't view it as consulting. I view it as making a family. And so maybe I would do a product instead, but I'd rehire the same people. You'd be screwed.
Randall?
Actually, I'd probably spend about $1 million on it for counseling for Tamara and I when we started our next company. And...
All right.
That's a good idea. An interesting thing, and this is getting a little bit personal, but for all those people out there who start a consulting company with a partner, which you should do, trying to do this solo,
it
just wouldn't have worked. But you quickly realize that you're now married. Heather refers to Randall as my second wife.
Mm-hmm. No.
I'm you're the
second
wife.
Husband.
You're the wife.
You're the bitch. I wear the pants in this consultancy. Yeah, actually, I think this is when the podcast starts going downhill.
Where's my f***ing drink?
Well, guys, it's been great talking to you.
Fade out. Fade to black.
Thanks for stopping by.
No,
seriously, I appreciate it. It's good talking with you guys.
It's been fun.
Thanks. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Enjoy the rest of the conference.
Oh, absolutely. Right. There's beer involved.
Right. And so, it'll yeah, be good. Absolutely. So if people want to get in touch with you guys, what's the best way to do that?
Actually, either follow us on Twitter. We're at Thunderbolt Labs on Twitter. Or we actually have an email address, which is us@thunderboltlabs.com.
Yeah, that goes to everybody.
Yeah, so we thought it was a funny joke. It was email us at Thunderbolt Labs. As it turns out, it just confuses the out of everybody.
I believe it.
Because they're like, no. So who do I email? It's us at Thunderbolt Labs. It's like who's on first, but with email addresses. It's a really bad idea.
Another mistake chalked up in the books.
Yeah. Definitely another mistake.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Oh, no. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.